If you are by your computer right now, like I am, do me a favor and go to betteringnow.com. Bettering, BETTERINGNOW.com. That's Jennifer Neville's website. And I want to call your attention to her Calming the Chaos course. I've known Jennifer for a little bit now. The show that you are about to hear is a timestamp in her journey that is remarkable. She has completely renovated her state of being, and she has done it through rigorous work and also rigorous study, and she's created a course called Calming the Chaos, which is targeted towards identifying and then eliminating chaos in your life. And if you're like me, especially in November of 2024, calming chaos is probably valuable to you. So again, bettering.now, the Calming the Chaos course. She offers other services too, but as you're about to hear, this woman has done the work. She knows what time it is, and she's also a professional teacher, so she knows how to teach. Calming the Chaos course. All right, here's the show.
And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best.
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
All right, I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
So, hi.
Hi.
I was so touched at, so we did the Hope Rocks Music Festival.
Yes, we did.
You were kind enough to come and sing. And we had to do a panel discussion before, and I thought they were going to be, I thought somebody was going to be interviewing us.
Right, you told me come prepared to just answer questions about how the Lifted Project came to be.
Yeah, well, that was my understanding. So we get there and they put a mic in my hand, and so I run over to you and I'm like, hey, I'm going to tap you for about 4 minutes on mental health, okay? And you're like, yeah, let me go. One of the highlights of the whole day.
If really?
Not, yeah, because I'm telling you, you were articulate. You were funny. You were real. You're fucking good at it.
Thank you.
And you have, and you know your shit because you've had your shit.
Well, that's the beauty of speaking about something that you've been through.
Right.
It's natural. Like, you're not asking me to stand up and speak about something I had to study and be prepared for. This was my life that I was starting to share with the world at Hope Rock. So it's pretty easy to talk about something you're very familiar with.
So your first time on the show was like a year ago.
Yeah, I think it was like a couple days ago would have been a year that you posted.
That's wild.
The produced.
Right. So the audience has grown a little bit since then. So can you catch people up on kind of your life story and how you wound up
where I am today?
Yeah, please.
Sure. So
you don't have to be your whole life. You can start from when it hit the fan if you want.
So I had a really rough journey with depression where I attempted my own life more than once. While I was trying to raise my children, part of a blended family, hiding myself from the world, from my students, from my colleagues. The only people that really knew what was going on in life were the people living in my house and my parents. And I was living a life filled with shame, and I didn't want to be here. And I was exhausted from it. So then, and I'd been in and out of the hospital. I'd been on and off a variety of medications. I did a couple different techniques that were non-medicative, but they still were not working for me. They eventually, after probably 15 different diagnoses I was diagnosed with, non or treatment resistant depression, because everything wasn't working.
Right.
I was on like 16 medications and they eventually failed. Like it'd be a couple weeks, couple months, depending on the treatment plan, and then they would just stop. Eventually, I got to a place where I was put on heart medicine and I was seeing a heart specialist in my early 40s. And I went to the emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack. But it turned out it was just a combination of all the medications I was taking, and it was not anything to do with having a heart attack, thankfully. I mean,
yeah.
But I was starting to find ways to figure out my depression and anxiety and everything else I was dealing with in life. And I decided at that point I was taking myself off of all medication with the exception of thyroid meds, because that is pretty much a life necessity at this point.
Right.
And I feel like that's where I started to heal. I'm not knocking medication for anybody that takes it. If it works for you, I'm very happy for you. I mean, we all need something that will work for us. This was not my avenue, though. And so I took myself off all medications, and I had to find other ways to treat myself and deal with life without medication.
Did you go cold turkey or did you wean?
Oh, I went cold turkey. I didn't even tell my doctors I was doing it. I just did it. And then I took care of some other things. Like I needed to get off birth control pills. I got my tubes tied. Like I did it all. Like everything was just.
I got so many questions. Okay. First, because I've been there. You actually made attempts on your life.
Yes.
What's the headspace right before that? What are you thinking?
I was thinking that I'm a burden and that I'm letting my children down. My children were young, and I was being a failure of a mother to them because I couldn't control what was going on inside of me.
But the
bigger part was feeling I was a burden. I was a burden to my spouse, my parents, my kids, everybody. Like, and I was just tired of disappointing everybody and still feeling like complete shit and just not wanting to be here.
I motherfucking hate the stigma that suicide is selfish. It is the exact fucking opposite. And everybody, I've had a couple people in here, myself included, who stood right on the edge and without fail, every single one of them, and now you just did it too, said, no, I did it for everybody else. I was dragging it. Like, I didn't want my daughter to have to read me about me in jail and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it is the least selfish thing, but people think it's selfish. I fucking hate that. Thank you for saying that. When you went cold turkey, and Graham, you know a little something about watching people go cold turkey.
Yeah.
When you went cold turkey, how bad was the withdrawal?
It was bad, but the reality was is that the entire time I was suffering, I still got up and went to work every day, and I put my best face on for everybody else in the world. I've never been, at least I don't think I am. People might say otherwise. I don't feel like I've really complained about life a lot. Like
Think you complained.
Well, you know, some people might say I was a little dramatic growing up. I don't know that I really was, but I just didn't feel seen or heard. And that's something I only kind of discovered on this new side of my journey. Mm. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. I wouldn't tell anybody that I was suffering. So it did not matter if I was going to throw up. It didn't matter if I was nauseous all day. I hid my tears and I just went on with life because that was kind of what was expected of me. So people didn't want to hear what was going on with me emotionally. So why would they want to hear the fact that I was still suffering while I was adjusting to not being on medication?
Right. Which makes it harder. When you go on, that makes it like so much harder. Did you try therapy?
I did.
And
here's the thing. It's kind of interesting that you bring up therapy. So I did a lot of therapy when I was sick. I did therapy for myself. I did therapy as a family. I did therapy with my spouse. And it wasn't helping. Let me tell you the interesting part, though, is that this past summer I took a trauma-informed training. And in that I learned something so valuable that now makes sense to me, is that when you've been through trauma in life, therapy is actually a form of just keeping your trauma loop going. So we go through this trauma loop. Something happens to us. It could be something really tiny. It could be something tremendous. It doesn't matter what it is. But something in us is sparked, and we need to have some resources, support, to get us through to the other side where we're like, okay, I feel safe again. And if you don't feel safe, then you're not going to exit that trauma loop.
Right.
I only learned that this last summer in one of the trainings I did. So now it makes sense that when I was in talk therapy, whether it was for myself, with my family, didn't matter, I was continuing the cycle of my trauma. Because that's all you're doing every week is going in and talking about, hey, what happened this week and what's different today from last week. And I even did cognitive behavior therapy, and they tried to give you different tricks as to how to manage some of the symptoms I was dealing with, like the erratic behavior. But again, I wasn't getting to the root of the issues.
Right.
I now actually am seeing a therapist now in a healthy state of mind, and it is so different. I'm actually even seeing the same therapist I saw by myself, with my children, with my spouse. I love her. She's a phenomenal woman. I can now receive everything that we are talking about in therapy to work through some emotions that I still have going on, and it's like a totally different game. So again, therapy, like, it works for some, but depending on what traumas you've been through and whether you safely get to the other side of closing that trauma loop, you may only be hurting yourself in that pattern of going over and over and over again and not getting out of it.
I think you and I are so alike. I think therapy works. So if you think of mental health as an ocean, a deep ocean, I think therapy works for like the top 10 feet on the surface.
Right.
And the challenge is that by the time most people get to therapy, they're already way farther down than the top 10 feet. And you're exactly right. You're asking – a lot of times therapy is asking – and again, if therapy works for you, God bless. If cold plunges work for you, God bless. Whatever works. But for a lot of us, therapists are asking you to address issues that you don't have the headspace – to address. So it just gets frustrating and you just keep reliving it without a resolution, like you say.
I mean, the reality is that we're looking at surface level issues when we're in a therapist's office, but those issues, they wouldn't even be issues if we didn't have something far deeper in ourselves that are so-called triggering us to get to the place that that's an issue for us. So we need to figure out what is really going on deep down inside that's making whatever it is that we're in that office for an actual problem for us.
Right.
And nobody teaches us these skills as to how to look within ourselves and say, wow, like, I'll give you an example. A few months ago, back in February, I was not invited somewhere, and somebody had mentioned it months prior, but then when that time came, I wasn't actually invited. And it was an honest mistake on that friend's part. And we talked about it, and everything's cool. I wrote a cool song about it and whatever. But but the reality was, like, I was so, like, upset by that, not getting the invite, and it was kind of in part of a conversation that was going on in a group chat. I'm like, what the heck? Like, why didn't I get invited, even though you mentioned it, like, 6 months ago? Turns out it was not that at all that was really the issue for me. I had to look within myself, and I found it really resented. It went back to a place when I was in, like, middle school.
Mm.
So I was triggered, so to speak, about an emotional time in my life when I was 12, 13 years old. And now this little mistake on a friend's part really didn't, like, that wasn't the issue.
Right, right.
And so we talked about it, of course, and everything was cool. But no one taught me the skill to look within myself and say, why is this really bothering me?
Do you think, I have a theory, because Gramsci's going to school for psychology.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I have a theory. I think a lot of people would benefit more from going through training to be a therapist like you're doing than going through actual therapy.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so, listen, if you're down and therapy isn't working, and by the way, I know a lot of therapists. A lot of therapists went into therapy because they needed therapy. So, listener, if you're... one approach to this whole thing is to get training in therapy, because that, and I don't know why it works. Do you know why it works that way?
I'm not sure. All I know is that since I came out on the other side of my mental health struggle, I've since become trained as a master level NLP practitioner. I've been trained in EFT.
NLP is neuro-linguistic programming?
Yes, which is all about language. So it's understanding.
See, I had to say that back to you because I NLP'd you. Go ahead.
So it's all about learning language and how we speak to each other. Even though you and I and Gramercy are in the same room, we're actually speaking a different language because the words we're using will kind of convey how we interpret the world around us. So some people might interpret it through physical touch, and some people might interpret it through auditory. Like, we all learn differently, so we all speak differently. Right. So you could be talking to me about an issue that you're having with me, and it might go right over my head because the words you're using may not align with the words that I would have received it in.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone.
That's so hard.
It is. It's really hard.
I had a communication specialist in here like a month ago, and she's lovely, and she has this method for communication, and it's scripted. So I come to you, or Jen, you come to me, and you say, John, I have a problem. And the first thing you got to do is make an appointment. And you say, is now a good time to talk? And, you know, so I say, sure. And you say, okay, I feel blah, blah, blah. You go for like a minute and a half, and then you stop. And then I have to say it back. And we keep going back and forth. And we did it on the show. And it's amazing how much you miss. Like, how much I didn't hear. And then when she said, well, I also said blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you did also say that, but I just didn't catch it. But the problem with that was it's so much fucking work to go through a script like that, but you do hear people way better.
It's funny that all of a sudden I can't remember the terminology for that, but I put a little bit of that in the course that I just developed. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like a reflective talking to each other because you're basically processing what I'm saying to you, and you're repeating it back to me in your own words, but it's basically confirming, did I hear what you meant to say?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
I listen for a living, and I'm supposed to be able to pay attention, and I still fucking missed like half of what she said.
But you might be listening, and while you're listening. But still thinking about what you're trying to say next.
That's the thing, if you're
thinking about what you're trying to say after somebody's done speaking, you're really not hearing what they're saying.
Right, right.
So it is a complicated thing.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of practice.
So how do you feel about the use of the word crazy?
I hate that word.
You do?
I hate the word. I'm learning now to accept it in the context that it might be said. Like, if somebody's just like, oh, you're so crazy, like, but you're goofing around about something and you do something that's, like, silly, like, okay. So I sent my kids a text the other day, and I'm not going to tell you what was in the text, but it was something that happened at lunch with my colleagues yesterday, and it was immature and silly and a lot of fun. So if my kids were to say, Mom, you're so crazy, like, I wouldn't have gotten upset by that.
Yeah,
but for the most part, when I was really sick and struggling, the word crazy would be like, you're so crazy. It's like, it's all in your head. You're making this all up. None of this is fucking happening in life. This is all just what you're making it out to be, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that was so hard because all I wanted to do was feel like somebody heard me or saw me, saw that I was struggling and trying to help me. And there were people, again, my parents, my spouse at the time, they all tried to help me the best they could. And I love them for that. But it wasn't what I needed. It wasn't the way I needed it. It's not their fault. Like, they didn't know any better. They do the best they can. We all do the best we can with the limited knowledge we have in life.
Right.
I just had to learn to take responsibility for myself and figure it out for myself because nobody can do it for you. But to sit there and tell me that something's in my mind or it's crazy, that's so hard to still handle sometimes.
I eat a lot of shit for using the word crazy. Let me steel man the case for the word crazy, though. I think, I only apply it to myself. I never call anybody else crazy. But I say I was batshit crazy. I say it all the time. And my rationale for that is I think one of the insidious tactics that mental illness has is fear. When you're walking through the stew, everything is fear based. Fear of pain, fear of failure, it's all fear based.
Fear that others are going to figure out your secret.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay, there. Yeah, and so the mental illness becomes something you're so afraid of that you can't deal with it. And so my thought is, if I'm afraid to say it, I'm afraid to be it. So the first step towards not being it is saying it. And so I use as many bizarre words for crazy as I can, because I want to indicate to mental illness, I'm not afraid of you. I treat you every day, but I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of you.
Does that? I can absolutely relate to that.
Okay,
and understand that. Yes.
All right. Cool.
Absolutely. But I guess what you're saying, like what I meant by hating the word crazy, it's not so much like, again, if you say it about yourself, that's one thing. If I say it about myself, that's one thing. Like, I was fucking crazy. I wasn't just batshit crazy. I was fucking batshit crazy.
Okay. One upper, fine.
But to have my family tell me I'm crazy or my friends tell me I'm crazy, well, who the fuck are you to tell me I'm crazy? Like,
right. And how's that anything like, other than hurting me?
Thanks for making me feel like a piece of shit. Like, I already feel bad enough. Like, I'm already struggling enough. I'm dealing with my own emotions, everything that I'm encompassing throughout my body, and then I'm dealing with the fact that I feel like shit because I'm letting you all watch it happen, and there's nothing I can do to make it better for you or for me.
Right.
So that just only compiled my feelings. Right. So,
Hold on one second.
Uh-oh.
Second. I'll be right. No, I'm just going to turn you down.
Oh.
Now you're hot.
Now I'm hot. Hope you got your question going. Don't worry. I have plenty to talk about.
All right, sorry.
That's okay. No, I forget that you have to actually edit this, so it's all good.
No, it's just a volume you're getting, like, which that's is good. No, all right. So sorry. How is calling somebody who's suffering, like, crazy is a word best used in the past tense?
I was crazy.
Right. That I can. But accusing someone of being crazy, how does that do anything other than hurt them?
I don't think it does, and I think it only makes somebody feel, like, shamed over the fact that they're going through something that they feel like they cannot take control over.
Right. And, and now you're making it hurt. Like, being crazy hurts enough without you telling me.
Right.
So do you look at your condition? I look at my condition as chronic. I think I'm crazy every day, but I know how to handle it every day now, and I didn't know how to handle it before. Same story, pills and didn't work and kicked it, right? So I view my condition as chronic. I get up every single morning with this condition, and I do things every day to manage the condition, and I know whatever day today is, I know tomorrow I'm going to have to do the same stuff. Do you look at it that way, or do you have a different?
I feel like I felt the same way for a very long time. As you know, that last time when I was on here, I talked about having to run every single day.
Right.
And I'm not running every day.
That's good, right?
It is a good feeling to know that I don't need to run to get through the day every day.
Right.
I do still feel like it is a chronic
thing. But you're
still
kick-ass shape, though.
Thanks.
I'm
not feeling like I'm in kick-ass shape right now.
You're working out with Durkin, aren't you?
I am working out with Durkin.
All right. Working
with
Durkin.
A little bit of a break.
Okay, understood.
Sprained my ankle a couple weeks ago, so.
Oh, you did?
Hiking with Durkin.
Fucking
love
Durkin.
Love her. I love her. I'm also dealing with some medical stuff, so we're on a little bit of a break in terms of the gym. So
but that's not
where I'm managing to, like, make sure that I'm doing everything I possibly can. So, yeah, maybe I am still chronically going because I still make sure that I have other things that are consistent every day. I've been journaling for a year. I've been doing gratitude every day for a year. I've been doing meditation every day for a year. So I
Beautiful.
Still have those things going
Can
on.
Can I tell you
day?
Something? This is not coincidental. You're a completely different person than the person I met a year ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely different.
Absolutely.
When I say chronic, I don't mean like I have to, like OCD, like I have to do the 3 pages. But I mean this condition's never going to go away.
Right.
So I have now I manage it a different way.
Right.
And you know, I don't get to the gym, but I have to manage it every day.
Right.
Right.
And I do kind of feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in that explanation, I do feel it is a chronic thing for me.
Right. How's the journaling going?
The journaling is good. I do different kinds of journaling. So every day I wake up, it's a silly journal thing for me, but hey, it works for me.
There's nothing silly if it works.
I guess I learned this on a TikTok of all places, and I haven't even watched TikTok in like a year, but it's like a manifestation journal.
Okay.
So every day I wake up and I write, I am grateful for, and then I write 8 things that I'm grateful for. They haven't even happened yet. But I'm going to tell you that even though some of them have not happened, they are happening
mm-hmm.
as we speak, and they are making things happen that even like my son was like, nope, this is not happening this way. And I'm still manifesting on his part that this is going to go the way I want it to go because it has to for him and where he needs to be in life.
Right.
So it's 8 things I'm thankful for every day that have not happened, but they're all happening just right. in different levels right now. They're not achieved, but they're all happening. Then I write down my intention for the day, which is today I'm excited to be on John Burton's radio show again.
I'm excited to have you.
And then I write down a few of the same affirmations every day. I am worthy of love and all that I want to come to my life. I am limitless. I am a badass.
You are a badass.
I am, you know, it's just all I am statements. And sometimes I change a couple of them up. But, like, I just put down things that I want to remind myself of each and every day. And, you know, to remind myself I'm an amazing person. I've come a long way in this journey of life. And to be where I am now is just, like, it's mind-boggling to me. Like, I've literally come 360 since I was here even last year.
Yeah.
I mean, to be 360, in a few weeks, I'm going to be doing my very first live 45 minutes to an hour public speaking event
Where?
On mental health.
Where?
In Cornwall. I did post about it on Facebook, but it is at Cornwall and Hudson Bandstand and Storm King Lounge and Fair. I'll text you the picture, but I did okay. post it. It is November 17th from 1 to 4. And I'm actually the opener for that event, pretty much. It's a 3-hour event, and I get to take the first hour of the event where I will sing both songs that have been produced and released, which have to do with my own mental health journey, and then my speech in between the two of them. That's the way I'm going into keynote speaking, is I'm taking my music and my story and putting it all together.
Perfect. Get a podcast. Hurry up.
I talked about doing a podcast with my girlfriend who's a dietitian because we talk about the fact that mental health and food, they are connected.
Yeah, 100%. I got better eating shit, but then like I cleaned my diet up like 2 years ago and now I'm way better. So you're 100% right.
Yeah, so.
Well, no, okay. So what's the date, November 17th?
November 17th.
And where is it?
1 to 4 in Cornwall.
Cornwall, okay. Listen, if you can get there, I'm telling you, I saw her vamp for 4 minutes with 2 minutes notice, and it was really polished.
Thank you.
Like, the band was tight. Like, it was really polished. So with time to prepare, I can't imagine, but I'm happy for you.
I feel like when you asked me to speak, like, of course I was nervous, and there was part of me that was like, am I babbling right now? Because that just goes through our mind, you know, we
right.
do have these limiting beliefs here and there, and they just kind of hit you once in a while, and I was like, oh my God, am I really just talking too much? Am I babbling? Like, what are people thinking? But I just kept going, and it was almost like an out-of-body experience, to be honest, and then you said something, and Heather, who was there, said something, and I only reconfirmed that this is where I'm meant to be in life.
I almost wanted to pull the guitar out of your hands and just say, no, just talk. just keep going with the talking. We have guitar players. You just keep – the talking's good, man.
Yeah, so I was like just blown away.
I mean,
away
the guitar was
it.
Good too, but I'm just saying. I was like, you were doing so – I felt like – I mean, this is me projecting, but I felt like that was the first time you felt flow in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. You could just
absolutely.
Tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy being a teacher. It's great. But this is where I'm meant to be. Like,
yeah.
Public speaking is definitely my thing. Even, like, the coaching
yep.
is probably more my thing. But public speaking, that is where it's at for me. And it's so odd to think that because most people are so afraid of it.
Are you on a speaker's bureau or anything yet?
Not yet.
All right. Get a couple under your belt, right?
Yeah.
All right. All right, cool.
Let's get one under my belt first.
Fair enough.
One real one. Not
right.
Although I did do an online forum where I was speaking, and that was just a couple weeks ago.
That's
took part in an online summit for trauma.
That's real.
And I did a 30-minute interview, so I think she asked me maybe four questions tops, and I just spoke for 30 minutes. And
are you subtly hinting that I should stop asking questions?
No, okay, not at all.
I'm kidding.
No, she was just kind of guiding. It was
right.
But it was me being part of 30-plus other like professionals that were doing their thing.
What's the coaching thing about?
So I opened up my own company called Bettering Now.
Bettering
Now.
Cool.
You know, because we want a better now,
right? Yeah.
So Bettering Now.
That's a great name.
Thank you. I actually owe that to my future son-in-law who came up with that name.
Oh, good name.
Yeah.
Future son-in-law.
Yeah. Good job, Michael. Shout out to Michael.
Who's getting married?
My daughter Maya is getting married.
When?
We don't know yet because Maya and Michael just moved to Texas a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And they are growing their own IT company.
Oh, wow.
And so at 22 and 23 years old, they know that it's best to kind of stay under their parents' insurance while they can and grow their business. And then when they can afford health insurance, then they'll get married.
Right, right. Oh,
so
that's mature.
Yeah.
They're very mature. My anti-marriage rant, right?
We did talk about that last
time. Okay, good. I just wanted to plant the seed just in case. I feel like I'm too late, but I just wanted to plant the seed. So Bettering Now, what is the coaching program? What is that?
So I'm using some of the techniques that I've gone through. One of them is timeline technique, which is, I believe, one of the most transformational pieces for me that shifted where I am from where I was.
What is it?
So it is basically going through your timeline and going and eliminating all of like your trauma without actually feeling the pain of it. Like I would get a little emotional in the moment, but like I wasn't hysterically crying over things that I've gone through. And you're also releasing some of those feelings that are hidden in you. Like we all have emotions. That is natural, right? We have anger, and that's a natural emotion that people shame us for, even if it's not about depression. Oh, no, don't get angry. Don't yell. Like, God forbid you speak up for yourself. Like, what the fuck? Right? Mm. But our anger is a way of saying to us, something's not right for us. Like, it could be right for you, John, but it's not right for me. And if I'm getting angry inside and I don't say anything, then it's just building up and building up. And, you know, as a kid being raised, you don't have that meltdown. Like, that's not right. Like, people are looking at us in the store because you're having a temper tantrum, right?
Don't make a scene.
Don't make a scene. Exactly. So we have all of these feelings that were not at the fault of our families raising us. They didn't understand any better. But they're basically teaching us to, like, suppress our feelings. And eventually, like, they all, like, just compile on top of each other. So we went through and you worked through like the five major emotions and you pretty much go back to like the very first time. Again, anger is the biggest emotion we have. So we went back through my timeline and we found the very first experience that I felt anger. And I can't even tell you because I've done this process more than once, but it can be in like this present lifetime. And usually when it's in this lifetime, it's between like birth and seven. It could be when you're in your mother's womb, it could be generationally being passed down to you or previous lifetime. And I don't know how people feel about that stuff and believe that.
We were just talking about that.
I'm going to tell you that I know for sure when I did it the first time, it was not in this lifetime that I first felt anger or fear. Like some of these things happened in a previous lifetime. I think in one lifetime, I was a little boy holding a balloon at a carnival, and my mother walked away from me, and then I got yelled at because she walked away from me.
Mm.
So
that's
the weirdest experience. Like, how would I ever know anything like that? Like,
right.
But either way, like, you go through and you have to figure out what is the reason that you were angry in that moment. Like, what is the positive experience, the positive thing that you're supposed to take away from that? And then basically the practitioner kind of feeds you that positive lessons that you're learning. And they get you to like say a lot of stuff. And you don't even know that you're really saying it. It's like all unconsciously, which is really wild again. And they bring all the positive learnings from whatever that very first experience with that particular emotion is. And then they carry you through your entire timeline to the present moment. carrying the lesson with you. So now you're not dealing with holding on to that anger, but you're dealing with, like, you've learned something, you've learned your lesson, now let's bring it forward and make peace with the fact that you were angry. I can tell you with anger, like, I used to lose my shit again. I went through bad depression. I also went through other shit in life that was prior to the depression. And I did not know how to express myself in any way. When I was angry, the whole world knew I was angry. It did not matter when I was married and with my family and my husband. Like, if we were out and about and he pissed me off, like, the whole, everybody knew. Like, and that's just the way it was. I didn't know how to do any better at the time. But now, like, I get angry. We all do. But I'm not explosively angry anymore.
Right.
So, like, I've let all of, like, these massive emotions, like, release from my body, and I feel, like, so much better. And I loved it so much that I was like, oh, well, I hurt my kids so bad when I was depressed, and I gave them all this shit to carry. I want to learn it for them. Turns out, after the fact, you can't do this process in your own family because you are part of, you know, their emotional being at this point. But I loved it so much. I did it twice. I actually have done, so NLP training I did once. Actually, nope, I did that one twice. And now I'm going through master level a second time, because the more you learn, the more you take away. And with each of these practices, among everything else that I've just done over the last year since I've met you, all of the trainings that I've gone through to be a coach have healed me even further. Like, we have so many layers to this person that we are, and you're never going to get to everything, but you keep digging deeper and deeper and finding more inner healing and more peace, and I don't recognize the person I used to be.
You're not the person you used to be. I don't recognize you. It's only been a year. I'm so happy for you, man. It's great. It's funny. You talk about, like, the past life thing, and I don't know where I am on that, but I do. So this year I found out about my biological father, and my biological father, apparently his full-time job was just getting women pregnant and then leaving. He burned a hole through the universe.
Wow.
Now, I never got anybody pregnant and left, but I burned a hole through the universe. And I'm like, that's...
Now it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So it gets passed on. Right. So you know, it definitely gets passed on. So if it gets passed on that way, why wouldn't past life make sense then? And then the thing you said about anger, you ever read Mind Body Connection?
I've not read that one yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you. Go on my to do list.
I will tell you a story. So this is pre Gramercy. I'm a guitar player and I write. So, and my hands were useless. They were cramped and you could see them pulsing and vibrating all the time.
And they didn't have talk to text back then where you could just talk what you wanted to write.
No, I was screwed. I literally couldn't hold a pencil. Like, it was cramping that bad. I stopped playing the guitar for like a year. Couldn't do anything. And I'm listening to Howard Stern. And he tells a story about this guy, Dr. Sarno, who Stern had crippling back pain and used to have to do shows on his back and didn't tell anybody. And then just go home and lay on his back and didn't tell anybody. And he goes and sees, he goes and sees surgeons. And I went and saw a doctor and they said, you got really bad carpal tunnel. We're going to have to operate on, we'll do one hand at a time because each hand's going to need 8 weeks. So, you know, you're not really going to be able to do anything for 16 weeks, which I did the math is 4 months. And I'm like, fuck, 4 months. I need my hand. So I'm listening to him and the success he had with Sarno. So I looked up Sarno. He's in the city. And I got an appointment. I don't know how. It was amazing. But I got an appointment. So I went down to see him. And first thing he does is he does a physical. And he goes, there's nothing wrong with your hands. He goes, what I want you to understand, you don't even have to believe this right now. All you have to do is entertain that it might be possible. And then he says, you have, and I don't remember the name of it. But what happens is, he says, same thing you did. Anger's your predominant emotion. Anger does is it dysregulates your breathing. When your breathing is dysregulated, your muscles don't get oxygen. When your muscles aren't getting oxygen, you get the fucking bends. That's what's happening to your hands. You got the bends. They're cramping all the time because you're not breathing. Don't accept that, but accept that it might possibly be true. And this whole thing is because you're mad, and just realize it's because you're mad. By that night, I could hold silverware. By the next day, I was playing guitar, and all because anger management. Crazy, right?
It is absolutely crazy.
Yeah. So you would love Mind-Body Connection.
I'm sure I will.
Yeah, it's a great book. All right, so we're coaching.
We are coaching.
We're speaking.
I also just finished developing my own course that people can buy just as a course, Calming the Chaos, which is first pretty much discovering like where you have chaos in your life, whether it's family, friends, relationships, job. So it's a little bit of an overview about what chaos is, how it pretty much impacts your life, and then doing some exercises to figure out where is chaos showing up in your life right now.
Where do we get the course?
Well, the masterclass is on my website right now, betteringnow.com.
Okay.
I believe my daughter will be getting the whole course up on my website any day now. But if somebody does the master course, then there is a survey they can take, and then they can move into the whole course anyways.
Betteringnow.com.
Betteringnow.com.
How long did it take you to develop a course?
That course took me about 6 months to write. And it really...
What's a sample exercise? Can you give a sample?
So one exercise I gave, not for the figuring out what the chaos is, because I did a chaos map. So that's how you're going to figure out where chaos is showing up in your life. But
I'm so taking this course. And the chaos is Gramercy.
I taught some exercises about like how to reframe certain situations, because sometimes just the way we're processing something, if we can just reframe it slightly differently, then it will ease our chaos and our anxiety, right? Like I'll tell you, not this isn't in my course, but I saw another TikTok like forever ago. It was a guy talking about mental.
Are you a teenager?
No. I actually don't even look at TikTok anymore.
You know it's all Chinese spies, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, Graham.
There was this dude on TikTok that was doing all these mental health videos, and that's why I got sucked in, because I liked all those things. And he talked about this story about, so your kids are being loud and obnoxious, so to speak, right?
Never.
Your daughter's being a pain in the ass,
never.
Right? And you can think about it as your kids being an asshole and they're being disrespectful and they're talking back to you. You can think about it that way. And that's the way I thought about it when I was still raising my kid, who's now 21. But he was an asshole. Jeffrey, you were an asshole. I know you're going to listen to this. You're an asshole. And you'll say the same, right? But then my mind shifted when this dude was like, instead of thinking about your kid being a jerk, think about the fact that they are speaking up for themselves. And that's the thing. I love my parents, but my mother and father told me up until my mid-40s that I was a difficult child. That was something I took with me forever.
Wow.
That I was a difficult person. Even when I was struggling, I was a difficult person. I was the hard kid to love. Excuse me, stumbling over my words. Not that I was hard to love, but I needed more love than my brother got, even though I felt like my brother was the king, right, of our household in terms of like, he was the child they loved and I was the one that they didn't, because I was a handful. The reality is that my entire life, all I was trying to do was feel heard and seen. I still feel that way now by some people in my life, whether they're in my life or they're not, whether they're family or they're not.
Right.
I still love them the same. I just now have the compassion to know that they don't have the skills to meet me where I needed them to meet me back then.
Right.
And I give them grace and compassion now with boundaries for myself to protect myself, because let's be real, you know, I have to take care of myself first and foremost. But again, the whole reframe was my kid's a jerk and he's acting like a jerk because he's being fresh to me, or my kid knows how to speak up for himself and he's not getting bullied and he's not bullying somebody else, but at least he's not letting somebody take advantage of him.
Right.
So just reframing that was enough for me to say, wow. That was me growing up, for one thing, but that was my kid. Where I thought he was a difficult kid sometimes, it was him having his voice. And why would I ever want to take his voice away from him?
Right.
That was mind-boggling to me again. Mm. And so simple reframes of, well, yeah, your kid's doing this. Well, no, why don't you think about it that they're advocating for themselves or whatever the case may be? And it can change so much.
I just did a massive reframe, maybe the biggest reframe of my life. Somebody, I forgot where I heard it, which I hate that, but I heard the line, it almost always has nothing to do with you. And so, like, last year, when people would schedule a show and then cancel it, I'd be fucking furious, and that'd be it. We'd be done. I have staff here that are trying to fucking – that are here to do a show. I'm here to do a show. You made a commitment. It blah, 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 blah. And I would take it as a personal insult.
Right.
Right. And then I reframed it. You need to take the chaos course because you can't honor your commitments. And that has nothing to do with me. So that was like – you ever reframe, Graham? Mm-hmm. On mic? Do you ever reframe anything? Like teach yourself to look at something differently?
Yeah.
Give me an example.
Like just like a little like – maybe like school and stuff and just like learning not to take it so like seriously.
Okay, cool. So I have a theory about psychology, and you're going to be interested in this too because you're going to school to be a psychologist. Psychology is at least 50% art. It's an art. There's some science to it, but it's 50% art. And the best artists are the people who have either seen shit firsthand or been through shit firsthand. And what's happening is that we're now entering a stage in psychology where people who have either seen shit firsthand or been through shit firsthand are on the other side of it and are offering avenues that you couldn't get prior. That no clinical, it can't be done clinically. And I think those are going to be the most valuable assets for psychology going forward. Stuff like your course. Somebody who has seen it. Because tell me if this is your experience. I can smell it on you. I can smell if you've been through the shit or not. Do you have that?
I do.
Yeah, right?
There is a student I connected with last year in my math class, middle school student. And I bonded with her. Like, we will still keep in touch now that she's moved into the high school. And I just knew that whatever she was going through, even if she did not want to tell me, she was going through a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm just gravitated to those kids, which is why, as much as I enjoy teaching 8th grade math as a special education teacher, it's not my thing anymore. I mean, I still show up for the kids. I do the best with them. But I want to meet them where they're at emotionally. I don't care whether you can learn how to solve an equation. This is where, like, as the educator, I'm like, our education system sucks. And we are so focused on these stupid tests. And I could get myself fired for saying this on your radio show. But the reality is that we need to focus on our students. And we want them to appreciate learning and growing. And we need to teach them techniques as to how to manage life. Because that's an important skill that they're not learning.
You get any techniques to manage life?
No.
I know that in our middle school, the kids do like meditation in gym class a couple times a year. And I think that's because I have an amazing gym teacher who has been through a lot of life. And she knows the importance of the mind-body connection because she went through and battled breast cancer. Ooh. And so she did all that, you know, that journey. And she's still advocating for her purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
what's your meditation practice? What do you do?
I actually use Infinite Timer. Is it Infinite? It's an app.
Is it Insight Timer?
There you go. I have the same one. Insight Timer.
Of course you do.
I use that in the morning. I listen to two affirmations on that.
Oh, wow.
Or two meditations on that. I also listen to, I created my own for myself. So this is another technique I came across. Just doing my own research, there is a woman who talks about being a master manifester. And so she talks about like speaking to yourself, but like as if you're somebody else is speaking about you.
Mm-hmm.
So mine is everything that I say in it. It's everything that I want to be. And now I feel like I have most of those things. Again, it's Jennifer Rebecca is love. Jennifer Rebecca is whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, Jennifer Rebecca is a master manifester. Jennifer Rebecca is...
You should put a meditation course on your site.
I actually put some meditations on my site.
Okay.
And that is another thing I will be working on, is creating just... Apparently, I have, like, this soothing voice, is what people tell me. So, okay. Like, I will be making some actual manifestation and mindset stuff and putting that out there. But
how many years do you go till you retire?
7 years too many.
Oh, you still got seven more to go.
Seven more, yeah, after
but you
this got, one.
But you can go full bore in the summer.
Yes. I mean, I'm and doing online, some stuff at night. Yeah. I'm doing stuff on the weekends. And, I mean, if a public speaking event comes up, I'm going. Like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, I just need to serve my purpose. And like I said, I like teaching. I like it. It's not like I hate it. I really do enjoy it.
Right.
I just know that I was built for better, bigger, broader. Like, I'm meant to make a huge difference in this world. I feel like anybody who's been through the shit, and a lot of it, they're meant to make the biggest impact on the world. That's why we go through this shit.
Right.
That's why you went through your journey to be where you are right now, impacting so many people's lives and making them better.
Oh, thank you. And this is so hard to – I know exactly where you are. It's so hard to be patient, because you want to go now. And like I think this show is probably my life's calling. And like from the day I started it, I wanted – 3 studios, and I wanted to be my own thing, and blah, 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 blah. But I was still had other stuff to deal with, and blah, and you're like raging, like, just let me out of the cage, let me out of the cage. But what I found was I needed that time to get better at it.
Right.
So that I was ready for when the opportunity presented itself. And so, so maybe that's what the 7 years is for.
Right. I mean, right now,
7 years in Tibet. Maybe that's what it's for.
Right now, I'm actually just back to, the one other piece that initially started the journey, and that was I started to write a book. And so now that I'm done developing my course, I'm going back to the next step, and that's finishing writing my book, which is my journey.
It's autobiographical?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's so hard to do. That's so hard to do. I have started and stopped that like 4 times, and I get to the point where I want to tell the truth. I'm like, I can't, because
somebody will read it.
This
oh my
person's
God.
Still
Even
alive.
Just what I'm saying on the radio, I'm like, oh my God. Well, I have said that on the radio? Oh shit, I'm in trouble.
I've gotten in trouble, but I've gotten over like worrying about that, because, and you'll find the same thing. I think maybe that like the more authentic you are, regardless of the consequences, ultimately the better outcome. You might have to swim through some shit, but the outcome's always ultimately better.
Absolutely.
Grandma, ask a question.
On
the mic, ask a question.
I know. Oh. Do you think like writing and like publishing your course like helped you like get through the stuff too? Because you mentioned like going through like the training to be like a therapist and stuff like helped you heal. So do you think like the course like also helped with that?
I think everything that I'm doing is helping me. The one big thing that I will talk about when I'm doing my speech is that connecting with others is a tremendous healing for yourself. So you're not only are you helping somebody else to know that they're not alone in life, but you are still healing yourself. So connecting with others is writing that course. It is writing my book. It is writing my music. And yeah, definitely even just, although I said I do the one journal practice in the morning, which is, some might say silly, I still journal like when I'm feeling something. Like if I'm really feeling sad about something, I'm going to write about it. And I'm going to get those emotions out, and then I'm going to feel better.
My journal has saved my marriage a dozen times. Easy. But
do you let your wife read your journal?
No. I don't.
It's personal.
Yeah. I mean, she could, but I don't think she's interested. Do you think she's interested? I don't think she's interested. Yeah, she's not interested. But and I do this thing, the morning pages, where you just write the 3. So sometimes it's not even a journal. Sometimes it's just, you know, sometimes I got to fill half a page and I'm done. So I just write watermelon until I'm done. But I love – one of the things that excites me about what you're doing is that it's another example of how doing good begets good. You think you're doing it for somebody else, and almost universally you get more back.
Absolutely.
And I love that's the nature of good. And
the nature of evil is the exact opposite. If you do something evil to somebody, you wind up losing more than they did. And
it's karma for you.
Yeah, yeah. but it's amazing that good and good and bad have those characteristics. Absolutely. Do you all right, the song. Yes. Tell me about the song.
Your Mask. So summer of we're in 2024.
Which there's going to be an awkward pause because we're going to talk about the song and then I'm going to stick the song in. So there'll be, I just need like an awkward 3-second pause where we just look at each other.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So I went in the summer of 2023. I flew out to Minnesota for an event called Formula for Fulfillment by my mentor, Mark Schultz. A phenomenal event, that 4-day event, and it talks about like looking within yourself and learning to live within your integrity. When I went to the event, I was like, well, you know, Mark did the whole timeline technique on me and encouraged me to get trained as a practitioner. So I'm probably going to get some of what I've already know in this, but I'm going to go. I'm going to support my friend, my mentor, and who knows what's going to come of it. Sure enough, I tell him now that he probably was like laying some of those thoughts to Your Mask in my mind while we were doing the event. So we did these journal pages and activities. And first of all, it was an amazing event and it skyrocketed me through to where I am now. Because I really did take a good hard look at where I was in life and I really had my eyes open and I had to walk away from relationships. It was very painful, but I had to like be true to myself, which is another piece I think that people don't understand about when you're suffering from depression. Maybe part of it, not all of it, but maybe part of it is that you're just not honoring yourself and who you are on your journey of life, and you're trying to please everybody else, and that doesn't work.
That does not work.
Yeah. But if we kind of fast forward to this year, I looked back at the journal pages when I was preparing, because in summer of 2024, I went back to the same event, but now I was an associate coach. And we were going through talking, getting prepared for this event, and I look at the journal pages and I'm like, oh my God, like everything we talked about kind of when I was journaling in one of the activities is where Your Mask came from. When I was flying home from the first event, I wrote that song in 15 minutes on the airplane.
Mm.
I was so excited by the lyrics just coming to me at 6 a.m. when I'd been up from 3 in the morning, because that was still a time I was running every day. I literally got up at like 2 in the morning, went running, went to the airport. I thought I would sleep on the plane, but instead my mind was like, nope, you're writing this song.
Mm.
I came home, put the chords to the guitar, and I went to open mic at Mahoney's that night because I was just that inspired by it, and it's never happened in that regard. Like, the songs come fast when they come. I don't try and purposely write music anymore.
Right.
They just come when they come, and I'm grateful for that. But that one was just so inspiring that I had to do it. So then this past summer in 2024, when I was an associate coach, I actually brought my guitar, and I played Your Mask for them. When I got back, that's when I got into the studio with Eric, and wow, I just sent it to him and I was like, listen, I already know the purpose of this song is to be the closer of my motivational speaking thing. I said, so you can cut it apart in any which way you want. I just want to make it something that people might want to hear on the radio or listen to. And he liked it so much that we took out like all of one lyric. That was it. Mm. And then just a few like transitional.
The mighty Eric Dalton.
Eric, and to watch him, like, that
is scary. It's scary.
Holy cow. He is so talented.
Scary.
Like,
it's an art form. Right?
It really is.
Yeah,
like,
he's crazy.
He just took out his electric guitar, wrote down some stuff. He did his bass guitar. I was like in awe watching it. I'm like, okay, you're meant to be doing this, because to watch you do this so quickly, efficiently, and phenomenally, and bring everything that I couldn't even think to add to my song to it.
Yep. No, he's good. He's good, man.
But when we're doing what we're meant to do in life, boy, do we shine.
Yeah. The song is called?
Your Mask.
Let's sit for 3 seconds.
Screaming loud.
got to get a little ticket. Okay, perfect. Okay, now I know where to put it. Hold on. Every time I say seriously, Siri jumps up. All right, what did I miss? Look at the notes. Did we get everything?
I think we pretty much got everything.
I'm so happy for you.
We got a lot of great things going on, yeah. Obviously.
Are we dating?
We are putting ourselves out there, but it is not an easy place to be.
No. No. But I don't know why I feel that's next.
I'm getting there. I mean...
Well, not yet. It's just that it's going to happen. Yeah, I feel
it absolutely will. And I think the timing right now, because... It's been a rough year of, like, working through emotions.
Yeah, you present as ready now.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm pretty much ready because I've been continuing to work on myself and working on the stuff that's making me happy, which is the course and all of that. It's a matter of finding somebody else that's going to put the same work into themselves and into me that I'm going to give to myself and to my partner.
Right. All right. The talk is November 17th.
Yes, in Cornwall. I believe it is Cornwall and Hudson Bandstand and Storm King Lounge and Fair. It is all about suicide awareness.
Beautiful.
And then it's from 1 to 4. I will be speaking from 1 to 4. I am being followed up, by John, I can't remember how to say his last name, another musician who will sing and talk about his experience. Somebody else you might want to get on your show here.
Okay.
And then we have Michael, who put the event together, another person I'm going to give you a contact for because he is trying to make a difference in this world.
That's wonderful.
A wild story that I can share, but I don't know how much time we have left in terms of my show.
Oh, talk.
Okay, so Mike and I connected on Facebook, and funny enough that I send any random guy that I'm not sure I know a message when I get a friend request. Hey, I see your friend request, not sure that I know you, any reason you're looking to connect? I mean, I'm obviously on Facebook to try and make a difference. I mean, I want to see my friends and family, but I'm on there. I have my own women's group that I'm trying to help. I post very raw and real stuff about life so that people see that I'm human. I am into music, so there's multiple reasons why people might want to connect with me, and somebody doesn't answer, they don't get my response. But he actually was like, I'm a mental health advocate and I'm trying to expand my 6 degrees of separation. Woof, mind blown. Oh my God, so am I. And here's where I'm at. This is what I'm doing. What are you doing? So we've met, and he asked me to be the first speaker. I get a first, like I said, 45 minutes to an hour to speak. I won't share his story that he started to share with me when I met him in person, because that's for him to share.
I'll get him on here. He can tell it.
I will give you his information.
Okay,
there's
wonderful.
Also Lisa, who will be speaking as well. She's part of Act Through Music.
Don't know it.
It's another mental health awareness.
Cool.
Suicide awareness group that, again, fighting for the same cause.
Yep.
So they will be speaking, and... It's going to be a great afternoon of information and authentically sharing our stories.
Beautiful.
And hoping to make a difference in the world.
The song is on Spotify?
Song is everywhere. Spotify,
song's everywhere.
YouTube, Apple Music.
Cool.
Anywhere you can find your music.
And the courses, the upcoming book, everything else is on betteringnow.com.
Well, the book is not done yet.
I know, but sometimes I'm saying it, I'm manifesting
out,
it.
Yes. Oh, it's already, like, I manifest it every day. So
okay.
And I'm working on it. I'm actively working on it. I think I'm at like 15,000 words.
You're getting there. You're getting
so
there.
It's not hard to tell your own story.
Right.
Again, I know you said, well, somebody might read it. Well, oh well. I'm not really saying too much about, like, other people. I'm just sharing. Mine is more of my journey and how I struggled, and it talks a little bit about the first coaching experience I had with my girlfriend Laura, and the fact that coaching, this is where coaching is different. You kind of asked me that earlier, so we'll go back for a minute. I know you can appreciate my ADHD brain because you
no
have the same.
I can relate.
Coaching is different than therapy because coaching makes you take responsibility in a different way, where therapy, as helpful as it can be, like I said, I'm currently in therapy, still working through a few things that my therapist can help me with. But, and that's where I just need to talk about my emotions. It's not so much tell me what to do. It was more, am I handling this the way I should be handling this? And turns out, yes, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I kind of needed that confirmation. But coaching, pretty much you're doing stuff for yourself, taking action and responsibility for yourself. And that's what actually gets the movement going. And somebody talked to me about practicing gratitude when I was depressed. Maybe things would have lasted as long. Like, and that's just a simple thing. And this is where I was talking with my coach about Mark. I'm like, how do I even charge all this money for a course? Because he's like, you charge this or that. And I'm like, these are all like common techniques. He's like, but did you know any of them when you were sick and depressed? He's like, give yourself value. He's like, you could be charging well over $10,000 for the amount you've invested in your mental health and your coaching and the courses. Give yourself value. So that's a big lesson that we all need to learn, is give ourselves value, because it's not simply about the product we're putting out to people, but it's all the time and effort and shit we go through to get to that moment.
That's like you know the that PR story about value. It's a story. I don't know if it ever happened, but the story is that there's a public relations expert and a CEO, and they sit down for dinner, and the CEO says, I really need a story about X, and I need it published here. So the PR person picks up the phone, makes a call, story sold, puts the phone back down, and goes, there you go. And the CEO goes, that was amazing. And the PR person says, that's $15,000. And he's like, what? That was 5 minutes. And the PR person goes, no, that was 22 years and 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the value. And the thing I like about coaching, too, as an alternative to traditional therapy, an alternative that should be explored, is in coaching, you get action steps much faster in the process. And the reason why action steps are so vital to recovery is you just need that one small fucking win.
Right.
And you think, if I can do that, maybe I can do this. And if I can do this, and I can build on it. And the sooner you get that little tiny win, which you get much faster in coaching than you do in therapy, the sooner you get that little tiny win, the confidence starts to build. And it's not so daunting. And maybe I don't have to be afraid of it. And maybe I can. And so I love coaching, man. I personally think traditional clinical therapists should as a part of ongoing education, should take coaching, should be trained in coaching as well, because I think it would move the dial towards action a little bit quicker. BetteringNow.com, talk on the 17th. The course is available, the master course is available right now.
Master course is available now. I'm going to say that Calming the Chaos will probably be on my website within the next week.
Okay.
It's all together. My daughter and I just have to finish talking about the last step, that price.
No, fair enough. And you're doing the Lifted Project.
And I'm doing the Lifted Project.
Beautiful, man.
Hopefully I'll be singing a lead in the Lifted Project. I'm putting that out there.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Graham, what do you have to say?
Nothing.
Thanks for having me. I feel so special. Nothing.
Nothing.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
You gotta love them, though.
I forced her to do a show on her own for like 45 minutes before, so she's probably talked out.
Yeah.
Jennifer Nelly, you're amazing. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
All right, man. Let's get out of here. You're good?
I'm good.
Awesome. Thank you.